We're doing the Rambam on the Sefer HaMitzvot. We're up to the Ramban, page Chafayim Beis, in the standard Vilna editions, page Ayin in the Frankel editions, Ve'od Manu Chachamim Ve'elu Shebamita. And further, we find that Chachamim enumerated the following people get the death penalty, Ve'em Asara Kulam Lo Lamdu Utam Elimidin Zara Sheva B'Gmar Ve'elu Enan Nisrafin. The Talmud over there enumerates 10 people who get the death penalty, and all 10 people are derived through Gzeir Shava over there. And the Rambam says that things that are derived from Gzeir Shava are rabbinic. Well, the Ramban is bringing proofs that no, things derived from Gzeir Shava are biblical. Look, we give these 10 people the death penalty, that's not rabbinic, and that's derived from Gzeir Shava. The Alif Chilul, Chilul Mitruma. We have a derivation over there, Gzeir Shava. It says the word Chilul, to be mechalel, to desecrate. Over here it says the word chilul in truma. V'sham ikshu kama pamim v'amru v'nedev chilul chilul minotar le'yotan bekaret. And the Talmud says maybe they should only get kares. Maybe you should learn chilul from nosar. There's a prohibition of nosar. Don't leave over the meat of a sacrifice beyond a certain deadline. So if you do, then one is in transgression of nosar. And then the punishment is kares. Now it says over there, don't leave it over, so you don't desecrate it. It also uses the term chilul. So the Talmud questions, why don't you derive from there that he should be chay of only kares? He should not get the death penalty. It says logically, it makes more sense to derive for truma. Then the Gemara says, wait a second, no, maybe it's more logical to derive it from nosar, and then it brings some proofs why it would work better that way. From all these different examples that I brought, we can see that they treat Gzeir Shava, something that's derived from Gzeir Shava, they treat it as biblical. It's not something that's just we have a tradition on it, it's rabbinic. No, the fact that they derived it, meaning the Rambam said, when is Gzeir Shava biblical? If they had a tradition, or going back to Moshe, that says that this Gzeir Shava should be biblical. The Ramban says no. Because you see here in these examples I brought, they didn't have an exact tradition how to derive it. They didn't. According to the Ramban, that would be the only way you can make it biblical. Well, in these cases, the Talmud itself keeps questioning. Maybe you should learn this way, maybe that way. Obviously, they did not have a clear tradition on it. And nonetheless, it's considered biblical. Even though it's used as a law of derivation, not as something that comes down in tradition.
So, Midrash carries more weight than
Midrash over here, it means a derivation, like a drasha, derivation, that's what it means to say. Okay. As a drasha, and not as a Kabbalah, not as a tradition. The Rambam had said, if they have a specific tradition saying that this is biblical, so then even a Gzeir Shava could be biblical. The Ramban says, look at all these examples I'm citing. They didn't have an exact tradition. They kept arguing, maybe you should say this way, maybe that way. Obviously, there was no clear tradition. And when they hit a bottom line, it had the weight of a biblical halacha. The Rambam had said, standard Gzeir Shava are not considered biblical halachos. They're considered rabbinics.
Maybe all these Gzeir Shava had the biblical tradition to them.
So the Ramban says, from the fact that the Talmud keeps going back and forth, maybe you should say this way or that way, you see they did not have a clear tradition. They were using their logic.
And they might not know how to derive the halacha, but maybe they would have known that if you derive with this word or with that word, that the outcome is a biblical result.
I agree. I think the Rambam can easily argue back to the Ramban that if they had a tradition going back to Sinai, that this Gzeir Shava is biblical, even if they didn't have it worked out exactly how it would work out, and that they did apply their own logic, it would still be biblical. The Ramban doesn't seem to entertain that train of thought. And you find in that same chapter, B'maika miflegi Rabbi Akiva Savar danin yumat meyumat v'in danin yumat meyamut. The Gemara over there brings a machlokas, Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara asks, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Yishmael learns Gzeir Shava from the word Yumat to the word Yumat, but he says you don't learn from the word Yamut to the word Yumat. They're not similar enough, so you don't do Gzeir Shava in those two words. Rabbi Shmuel Savar Danin Ediot Mediot Ven Danin Ediot Minavi. Rabbi Shmuel says, well, if I have a choice to compare two situations where I give the death penalty to a regular citizen, or a situation where I have to derive the death penalty for a regular citizen from a death penalty given to a false prophet, well, I'd rather derive from a simple citizen to a simple citizen. It's not the same word. Here it says yumat, here it says yamut. Well, I still would rather cases that are more similar, even if the words aren't more similar. Rabbi Kiva says, I go with the two similar words, even though where does it say yumat by the false prophet? Where does it say yumat by a regular citizen that sins? Well, I'd rather compare a citizen to a prophet if it's the identical word in the Torah. And Rabbi Shmuel says, no, I choose to have two cases that are similar, even if the words aren't identical when I'm deriving. Here you see, what the subject is, if you have a zar, a person who's a non-kohen, a regular citizen, who does service in the temple. So that's biblically prohibited. Rabbi Akiva says he gets the death penalty of stoning, and he derives it from Gzera Shava, Kasher Perashti. As I explained, Shaitab Yado Kabbalah, Shedino Nilmat B'Gzera Shava, Mimila Yumat. What tradition did Rabbi Akiva have? His tradition was that the halachos of Zal Sheshimesh, of an Israelite that did service in the temple, are derived from Gzera Shava of the word Yumat. That everyone agreed on. The question is, okay, now where do you learn it from? Where do you apply the Gzera Shava? V'samal shanachon balilmod yumat meyumat. So he said, okay, so you learn it from the case of a prophet, where it says if he gives a false prophecy, he gets a death penalty, and it uses that same term, yumat. Lo lilmod miyamut lepotro midinei adam velanicho ledinei shamayim. And he doesn't learn like Rabbi Yishmael, that case is derived from another case where it says yamut, in which the death penalty is in the hands of heaven. We don't touch him. So what do you do to a guy who does service in the temple, an Israelite? Rabbi Akiva says you derive it from a false prophet. We give him the death penalty. Rabbi Shmuel says, no, you don't. You derive it from regular citizen where it says, I don't remember for which sin, it says yamut. And I rather derive two cases where an average citizen did a sin than two identical words. But you see that Rabbi Akiva was deriving a gzera shava in order to give the death penalty. V'chein harabot imanu. And you have many examples like this. V'kvar patru 15 nashim min ha'chalitza min ha'ibung v'tzorotehen v'tzorot tzorotehen l'dat betilel v'yotze inyanam min ha'midrash. Okay, you guys know the first mission in Yevamos? No, okay.
So, sorry, what are the two cases? One is where they're both yumat and one is a...
They're both yumat, but one is a prophet and one is a citizen. And the other one is...
Two different words and they're both...
But they're both citizens, right. The next proof he's bringing is... we know we have a mitzvah of yibum. A person dies without children, so then his brother has a mitzvah to marry his wife. What happens if, let's say, the two brothers are Yaakov and Esav? Okay? And Esav marries Yaakov's daughter, Dinah. Then Esav drops dead, and Dinah is left a widow without children. Yaakov can't marry his own daughter. So Yaakov doesn't have to do Yibum or Chalitza, being that she's a girl that he's prohibited from marrying. It's his own daughter. His brother married his daughter. That's permissible. A person can marry a niece. He can't marry an aunt, but he could marry a niece. So Yaakov doesn't have to do Yibum or Chalitza. You could have another case where Yaakov has a half-brother who marries a sister. Guys, take. Yaakov has a sister who is not really Esav's sister, and Esav marries her, and then Esav dies, and again Yaakov doesn't do Yibum because it's his sister. You could have a situation where it's Yaakov's mother. Yaakov's brother from a different mother. However, you have a lot of cases where... Yaakov's brother could marry a woman that's biblically prohibited on Yaakov. And then when Esav dies, Yaakov doesn't have mitzvah yibum. The Talmud, the Mishnah, sums it up as 15 different women. 15 women that Esav could marry, that if he dies, then Yaakov doesn't do yibum. So that's So that's the fifth. That's case number one. 15 women who there's no yibum. Next case. Let's say Esav was married to two wives. Okay, Esav was married to Yaakov's daughter Dina, and he's also married to Frances. Okay, Esav dies. Frances is a woman from Uzbekistan, not related to anyone. Esav dies. Yaakov can't do yibum with his own daughter Dina. What happens to Frances? Halacha says Frances is the tzaras erva. She shared a husband with a woman that's biblically prohibited on Yaakov. So then Yaakov doesn't do yibum with the tzara either. Doesn't do yibum with Frances either. What happens if Dina and Frances were married to Esav, and then they have a third brother, Yishmael, who marries Frances? Now, Frances is really prohibited, is really permitted to Yaakov. The only thing is, she shared a husband with Dina, right? She's Tzara Serva. Says the Mishnah, Tzoros, Tzorosein, the Tzara, the shared wife of Frances, who was a shared wife with Dina, is also Pater from Yibum. That's called the 15 women themselves don't do Yibum, nor does the second wife do Yibum, nor does a third wife who shares that second wife, even if she doesn't share the first wife, do Yibum. No, that's it. So, you learn the Mishnah. It's the first Mishnah in Yevamos. First Mishnah in Yevamos goes through the 15 women. Then add to all those women the Tzara and the Tzara's Tzara. Tzara means a shared wife. Comes from the word Tzar Ayin, meaning she doesn't want her to take a bigger piece of cake because she wants a bigger piece of cake. She's always looking at what she's taking because she wants more. So they're always competition. So it's, I think it comes, the Rishonim, I think, say it comes from Tzarut Ayin, from stinginess. Meaning she looks, she squints, she wants her always to get less, because there was competition. So, Saras Erva means she was a shared wife with a woman who was an Erva to the brother. She was prohibited to marry the brother. So the Ramban continues, he says, V'kvar patru chameshes l'nashim min ha'chalitza u'min ha'ibum. Our sages said, you have 15 women who don't have to do the mitzvah of chalitza or yibum if their husband dies, vitzarotehin, and their shared wife, meaning the other wife, vitzarotzarotehin, and the third wife who shares a husband with the second wife, who shared a husband with the erva, with the relative. Ledat Bet Hillel, according to Beis Hillel, all these women don't do yibum or chalitza. The Yotzeini, Namina Midrash, where do we get this whole halacha from? It's a derivation, it doesn't say it. It's not written explicitly anywhere. According to the Rambam, derivations are only rabbinic, says the Ramban. Well, here you're applying it to a biblical law. Ubet Shammai yum chayvin otam chalitza. Beis Shammai disagree. Beis Shammai say, you cannot do yibum to all these women, but you should at least do chalitza. V'chein and so too, eshet achiv shelo haya bo'olamo. What happens if we have two brothers? Let's say we have... Yaakov and Esav again. Technically, if Yaakov marries a woman, that woman is biblically prohibited on Esav. Unless Yaakov dies without children, then the Torah teaches us there's a special mitzvah that Esav has to marry Yaakov's widow. But technically, short of that, if Yaakov doesn't die without kids, then Esav is biblically prohibited from marrying Yaakov's first wife. So far, so good? Okay, what happens if Yaakov marries Frances and dies, and then Esav is born? So that's called Eshet Achiv, his brother's wife, Shelo Haya Bo'olamo, that they weren't in the world at the same time. So then she's also biblically prohibited. He's not allowed to marry her. There's no such concept as Yibum, Chalitza. He's prohibited from marrying her. We could explain the reason, but
she wouldn't be able to have kids.
Oh, not necessarily. He married her when she was 14. Then he died when she was 14 and a half. Then his brother was born. In those days, they did it. You see all the time. I mean, Batsheva was all 7 when she got married. She had Shlomo when she was 8. Not Shlomo, her first son. She was 8. In those days, people had kids when they were younger. The Gemara, yeah. Well, you see that? Yehuda's children all married when they were younger and had kids when they were under 10. Yehuda had great-grandchildren by the time he went down to Mitzrayim. How'd that happen? Uh-huh. Right. Kids having kids.
Like America.
What?
Like the problems in America. The young people.
Yeah, yeah. Only then they were more mature. It wasn't a game.
Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, people died at 25, so they had to mature much quicker. What was the average lifespan? 30. They didn't have penicillin. They didn't have antibiotics. The person had gum disease. He's dead. Finished. Any infection, you had to pray a whole lot that the body will overcome the infection. Think of how many times we go to the dentist. We have a root canal or anything like that. They didn't brush their teeth. They didn't have all the stuff we had. Gum disease was a big killer in those days.
It's interesting to think that they never had an old coot. The old man.
They did. Some people lived a long life.
Yeah, right. But generally, you wouldn't have these old social welfare or whatever.
No, you see, they did. You see, all the time they had old people. They had their exceptional old. But the average lifespan wasn't too long. So you had to get married young and make the most of the life as long as you got it. So his next example is, Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Bo'olamo. His brother's wife, where he and his brother were never in the world at the same time, so that's also prohibited. Ve'achiv Minayim, or a brother where they only have a shared mother, all these midoshim min. All these are derivations. It doesn't say it explicitly anywhere that it's only a brother through the father that you do yibum for. V'kvar tiaru damim beisha v'timu arba bilvad min midrash damea damea. The Talmud tells us an interesting concept. What does dam mean? What color is blood? Okay, so no. Blood comes in many colors. There's blood that comes out of a person can be red, can be black, can be green, can be brown, can be many colors. You'll tell me that's not blood. I'll tell you right, but Chazal called it blood. And in Chazal, when they used the term dam, they referred to more than just what we call blood. A woman, after she menstruates, a woman can see spotting, which will defile her. So we have a tradition, what colors are considered blood that defiles? What colors are blood that does not defile? But it's not that we say that's not blood. There's dam tameh and dam tahol. So the Talmud derives from the verse that there are 4 colors of blood that are defiled and the rest of the colors are pure.
Are those other colors still medically blood or something else?
It's a good question. I'll answer you with a question. Okay, we salt meat. We say that takes out the blood. And whatever else is left is called muhal. What's muhal? Not blood. Scientifically, we'd call that blood, right? Halakhically, we say that's not blood. You salted the meat, whatever's left isn't blood. Looks like blood to me. No, it's not blood. The meat that comes out when you salt it, that's halakhically blood. This is not halakhically blood. When it comes to a woman, is what they called green blood blood? I don't know. See, what happens is that when the blood comes out of the woman, it's mixed with all kinds of fluids that also come out of her womb. And that causes the blood to have different shades. So you could see all kinds of colors. And it's not so clear to me where you're going to draw the line scientifically, like where is their blood mixed in and where not. It's very common that there are all kinds of colors that come out of there, out of the womb. A woman after she gives birth could see brown and black and red and
never heard that. It's interesting.
Comes out different. And the truth is that blood from different places also has different colors. Meaning blood from your mouth is going to have a slightly different color than blood from your finger. It's mixed with your saliva. It's different. It's, back to So the Ramban says that's biblical. And it's derived, it's a derivation. Maimonides says derivations are not biblical. V'dan Rabbi Meir, hamapelet min be'machaya, Rabbi Meir says, what happens if a woman miscarries? So we have a lot of halachos describing a miscarriage. Sometimes we say that was considered a real fetus, and then she's considered as though she gave birth, and then she would be defiled for giving birth, and then she'd have the days of purity after a woman gives birth. If it's a boy, she has 7 days of defilement and 33 days of purity. After a girl, she has 14 days of defilement and 66 days of purity, where whatever blood she sees, we say that's not blood. Biblically, rabbinically we do, but biblically she has days of purity. She has to bring a sacrifice after she gives birth to a child. What happens if she miscarries? Rav Meir says, if she miscarries and it looks, the fetus looks like an animal, a wild animal, the off or a bird, bedin yoledet. So then we treat that miscarriage as though it was a birth. Once it looks, once it has that much of a shape, so then that's considered that the woman gave birth. And then he says she has that period where whatever blood she'll see, she's still pure. Now you have to understand, if the woman's defiled, then it's a biblical prohibition, kares, if she and her husband are together. And yet Rabbi Meir says, no. If once it had the shape of an animal or a bird, once the fetus reached that amount of form, that's called a birth, a delivery. And after 14 days, so then she has the remainder of 33 days. We don't know if it was a boy or a girl. So we go, we're stringent, we take 14 days for defilement, and then we'll give her 40 minus 14, we'll give her 26 days of purity till the end of, assuming it might have been a boy. But that's all biblical. And how does he know that? Midin gzera shava. The chachamim svurim dekol shen bo mitzvat adam en ovlad. The sages say if it doesn't have the form of a human being, if you can't tell that fetus was a human being, then that's not called a delivery. And then you don't have those halachos. Umatirin et aisha bezrikat get lechatzera midin ribui. Our sages say, let's say a guy wants to divorce his wife, so technically he has to write a get in her name and hand it to her. What happens if he says, Mary, Mary, where are you? She says, I'm right here in my house. My father gave to me, and you can't set foot into my house. This is my house. He says, that's fine. Catch. Throws into her yard the get, the divorce document. It entered her yard. She says, I don't want to be divorced. I want you to still take care and feed me and do all the other stuff. I don't want a divorce yet.
But he can't step foot into her house.
Fine, but the second the get enters her property, her domain, so then halachically she's divorced. How do we know that? Midin ribui. We learn it from a derivation, from a ribui. That's a derivation, it's a biblical halacha. You're going to let this woman remarry someone else. Biblical. Rambam, you said derivations are not biblical. You said they're rabbinic.
These are all examples
of derivations. All examples. It's even worse, says Nachmanides. Because what does the verse say? You want to divorce a woman, you got to put the divorce contract in her hand. The derivation says it's enough that it goes into her domain. And you have the Shabbos, which is one of the most stringent prohibitions in the Torah. And our sages permitted witnesses who saw the new moon to travel on Shabbos. Moshe Shaninu, as the Mishnah says, Al Shnei Chodeshim Chalinta Shabbat. For 2 months, Tishrei, Nisan, we would desecrate Shabbos to get the testimony to the courts. Ukshabet HaMikdash Kayam, and in the times of the temple, Mechalin al Kulan, then the witnesses would desecrate Shabbos in order to let the courts know about a new moon for every month of the year. How did the rabbis know you're allowed to desecrate Shabbos in order to get the testimony to the courts? They derive it Merivui. They learn it from a ribui, also a derivation that the Torah says, I want you to declare these days of Rosh Chodesh in their correct times, to include, even if it's at the expense of Shabbos. So what do we see here? They have a derivation that overrides one of the most stringent biblical halachos. So says the Ramban, here I've just given you a slew of proofs that the sages use derivations as sources for biblical laws. Derivations give us biblical laws. They're not rabbinic. V'reiti lo l'rab. So now that he's finished this whole attack, the Ramban continues and says, now I've seen the rabbi, meaning the Rambam, In an introduction that he gave to specific mitzvot, the Rambam says the following. He says, sometimes you have a punishment in the Torah. The Torah says, if you do something, you get this punishment. But the Torah doesn't explicitly say, don't do it. So we have a rule that the Torah has to tell me what I shouldn't do, and the Torah has to tell me the punishment. And I have to have a verse stating both. Sometimes I have a situation where there is none. I only have a verse telling me the punishment. Kigon v'makavi v'imo. For example, the Torah says, he who hits his father and mother gets the death penalty. There's no verse that says, don't hit your father or mother. Umkalelotam says, he who curses his parents with God's name gets the death penalty. No verse says, don't curse them.
But it says in the commandments.
It says, honor them.
Isn't that the same thing?
Okay. Shalom, but the question is, does it count as a separate mitzvah? The Rambam will agree that he who curses them transgresses the mitzvah of honoring his parents. But does it count as its own mitzvah? So the Rambam says, if the Torah delineated separate punishments for these actions, it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, don't curse your father, don't hit your father, but the Torah only says, he who did gets a death penalty. So the Rambam says, when you're stuck in a situation like that, then you have to say, well, I'll derive the prohibition from somewhere. I'll say, this must be similar to that, and with a hekesh, I'll get out the prohibition. Wait a second, there is no prohibition. Ah, you're using a limud. But you just told me a limud is rabbinic. And the Rambam defends himself. He says, I know we have a rule. Throughout the Shas, it says, wherever the Torah wanted to tell you don't do something, it has to spell it out. The Torah can't assume you'll figure it out from a kal v'chomer. So how come I'm saying you could figure it out from a hekesh?
Ve'omram tamid chimazirin min adin. Hekesh is a connection, right?
Hekesh is when the Torah connects two points. Yeah, either by putting them both in one pasuk or by telling us this is like that. Yeah. So the Talmud often says, how can you warn from a kal v'chomer? Shanachnu lo nomar en mazirin min adin, ela kedei she'neaso ma shelo yitba'er lo isur al derech hekesh. He says, let me tell you the logic. When do I say you can't use a kal v'chomer to derive a prohibition? That's when I don't have a source for that prohibition from a hekesh. Aval kshenimtza ha'onesh beverur. But what happens if the Torah clearly says, if you do this, you get the death penalty? And the Torah doesn't clearly say, don't do this. So then I don't apply this rule, don't use laws of logic to derive a prohibition. So then you know the Torah doesn't want you to do it. The Torah says, you do it, you get the death penalty. Well, then obviously the Torah doesn't want you to do it. Ah, but the Torah doesn't say it anywhere. There's no explicit pasuk. The pasuk says, like you said, one of the Ten Commandments says, honor your parents. Very good, but it doesn't say get the death penalty if you don't.
What does that say when there's a lav?
Oh, that's an asay. This is a lav, right? So the Rambam tells us this phenomenal rule. He says, well, if they spell out the punishment, so you got to say, obviously the Torah prohibits it. And ve'ulam, and what you got to do is, notziam niya bishvil sheitchazek lanu ika umram, you have to derive the prohibition from somewhere, because we have a rule in Talmud. The Torah doesn't punish if it didn't tell you not to do it. Ah, but here the Torah does mention it didn't tell you not to do it. Ah, so we'll derive it from somewhere. Instead, the Rambam's in a corner. So the Rambam says, okay, well, I have to say it is derived. Aye, but I say, the Talmud says you cannot derive a prohibition. I'll tell you, yeah. That's if I don't know the Torah prohibits it. But here I know the Torah prohibits it. Ah, but the Torah didn't tell you it prohibits it. The Torah just said it punishes. Yeah, but if the Torah says it punishes, you know the Torah prohibits. Yeah, but you told me you can't punish if you didn't warn. Ah, okay, so I'll warn from a derivation. You understand the logic? It's almost circular reasoning. You just got nowhere to get off the train. You're telling me I'm going to warn you from a derivation, but you don't warn from a derivation. Ah, I didn't invent it from the derivation. I know it. I know the concept that it's prohibited because the Torah punished. So once I know the concept that it's prohibited, then I can warn from a derivation. you guys see the logic?
It's prohibited because it's prohibited.
What?
Right.
Huh?
It's prohibited because you know it's prohibited.
It's prohibited because the Torah is punishing. If Torah is punishing, then you know Torah is prohibiting it.
Right.
Yeah, but you can't derive the prohibition from here. Right, I'm not deriving it from the fact that Torah punishes it. I know that Torah doesn't want it. How does the Torah punish without warning? So in order to satisfy that technical need, I'm going to use the derivation to get the prohibition. But I really know it's prohibited from the punishment. Now, I'll tell you, the way I'm explaining it is the way I understand the Rambam. I'm not sure I'm right. And I said on this Rambam a few days ago, I happened to come in my learning of Sefer HaMitzvos, I was learning this. I'm up to the prohibition 204, 205, and this is 200, 201 and 202 where the Rambam discusses. I just learned this. And this is the way I understood the Rambam.
So then he considers the tase of honoring the father as the azhara, as the warning.
No.
He says,
I know it's prohibited because they punished. But I'm going to have to derive the prohibition from a hekesh. You'll tell me you can't derive a prohibition from a hekesh. I'll tell you right. It's prohibited because they punished. I have a technical difficulty that I need a source.
There's no difference really in saying you were not allowed to do this and you are punished if you do this.
It didn't say you're not allowed to do this. It said you shall honor, and then it gives a punishment if you don't.
So if you curse.
There's no difference in
if you curse or hit.
Right. Yes.
So it's telling me on these actions, obviously the Torah doesn't want me to do it. So now I'm stuck with a... Oh, there is no lotase. Lotase has to be don't curse. It has to say a lot.
Isn't you're going to be punished for doing this?
No, that's called an onesh. A lotase is an azara. It's a warning. It's an instruction. Don't do it.
The reasoning to pull out from the onesh that it's
right. So I know right. I know God doesn't want me to do it, but I don't have the lav yet.
Right.
The lav I'll derive from the hekesh.
The actual saying don't do that.
Right. The actual don't do it. I'll use a derivation. So now the Ramban, yeah.
The Ele Im Ken is here at the end of the pasuk.
So that's a rule.
So that refers to what is that? Is that the he's here is the that's the
hekesh is going to be the he's here. I need the hekesh for the he's here.
So as long as the positive mitzvah, let's say in this case, is there.
In this case, it's the punishment that's there.
So what role does the positive?
Nothing. He brought in the positive. I didn't say the positive.
So the honor of the father has nothing to do with this.
I don't think so. Rambam says, if the Torah punishes for something, I know the Torah doesn't want me to do it.
Totally,
I need to satisfy the requirement to have a source that says don't do it. Okay. I know logically the Torah doesn't want me to do it, but I still have this technical difficulty. I need a source that says don't do it. So for that technical difficulty, I'll use the hekesh. You'll tell me, yeah, but you can't prohibit something from a hekesh. I'll tell you, I'm not prohibiting it from the hekesh. I know it's prohibited because the Torah punished for it. I have a technical deed.
That's perfectly circular.
Yeah.
I don't think so, because you can break it down. Meaning, you'll ask me, how do I know God doesn't want me to do it? I'll tell you, I know because God punished for it. You'll ask me, okay, but you can't give the punishment without a source.
Saying don't do it.
Meaning, do I know God doesn't want me to do it? Yes. But do I have a source? Do I have a verse that says don't do it? I use the hekesh. You'll tell me, yeah. I think this is the pivotal point why it's not circular reasoning. Because I think what the Rambam means to say is, if my hekesh would be, if my derivation would be the sole source for the concept that this is prohibited, then I couldn't do it. But if I have another way of knowing what God wants from me, not a source, that's not the source. But I know from the punishment God doesn't want me to do it. So I didn't invent the fact that God doesn't want me to do it. I didn't derive it.
The knowing from the punishment is...
I could know from the punishment. I can't apply the punishment. I have a technical need in order to apply the punishment. That's what I'm saying. That's the slight difference here why I think it's not circular reasoning.
Yeah, because you can't punish without saying love.
So the punishment serves two purposes. It actually manifests itself as two different things. Has an implicit lav in it. And it
not a lav. It has an understanding that God doesn't want it.
It's not implicit. It's
I do the hekesh from somewhere else, but from the punishment I understand God doesn't want me to do it. Now I'm not inventing this concept.
Once
I'm not inventing it, I could use the hekesh, says the Rambam.
Sort of in this case, you're making a hekesh to itself.
Well, we didn't yet see what the hekesh is, but okay.
It says there's a hekesh to something else.
Yeah. Now that we finally understood the Rambam, the Ramban is going to take it to task. Vize kulo ta'ut. He says,
big mistake,
Rambam, right? Upshara mishubeshet. And this is a very, very erroneous compromise here. Sheikh Dimalikayem Devarav. He gives this whole introduction because he's stuck.
Right.
So he wants to make what he says work, but it doesn't work that way. The whole reason he needs this is because he doesn't really accept the derivations. He's placing a certain doubt in the potency of the derivations. He says it's very simple. Chazal said, "En mazirin min adin." The word din in Shas means kal v'chomer. Doesn't mean any derivation. You want a hekish to be a source for a prohibition, you could use it. You want to use any other law of derivation, you could use it. All it says is, "En mazirin min adin." You cannot use a kal v'chomer to derive a prohibition. V'chein amal bo enonshin min adin. You have the same rule. You cannot punish from a din, meaning from a kal v'chomer. K'mo shenit v'el ben k'mot rabim Sanhedrin, as you find throughout tractate Sanhedrin.
So you're saying if you have something that's in the pasuk, you can't, and there's a punishment on it, that you can't make a kal v'chomer on that.
Break. No. Cut. 1 second. There are two rules in the Shas. One is enonshin min adin. The other is en mazirin minadin. En onshin minadin means you cannot derive a punishment from a kal v'chomer. En mazirin minadin means you cannot derive a prohibition from a kal v'chomer.
So what do those two things mean?
That means, let's say I have a situation where it says if a person lives with his wife's daughter, he gets a death penalty. So can I derive a kal v'chomer that if he lives with his own daughter, he gets a death penalty? Isn't that a kal v'chomer? It's his wife and his daughter.
Right.
So I say, no, you can't give a punishment. Even in something so obvious, you can't give a punishment from a kal v'chomer.
Okay.
I cannot derive a punishment. It has to say it explicitly. So you have the concept, en mazirin min adin. You cannot derive a prohibition from a kal v'chomer. Not only the punishment. If the Torah says you cannot marry your wife's daughter, now, does that also mean you cannot marry your own daughter? You'd say it's a kal v'chomer. We say, well, you cannot derive prohibitions from a kal v'chomer.
But since the prohibition and the deen usually come as, you know, both together, then you're usually talking about parallel.
Well,
No,
there's azara and there's onish. Two different things. One verse that says don't do it, one verse that says what happens if you do. Now, the Rambam understands that to mean you cannot use any of the laws of the derivation in order to know that something is prohibited or in order to give a punishment. The Ramban says that's not true. If you derive that it's prohibited to curse a parent or to hit a parent from a hekish, fine. All it says is don't do it from a din. Din means kal v'chomer. You could use the other laws of derivation to derive a prohibition or a punishment. That's all. Very simple answer.
How does Rambam think that din means?
I don't know.
This is just what the Ramban is quoting from his.
This is the way he's interpreting him. He's saying, why is the Rambam in a corner? Because this is how he's explaining it. Yeah.
The Ramban says you have to use a different type of.
He says, so long as you're not using kal v'chomer, you can derive a punishment or a prohibition. It's only kal v'chomer that cannot teach you punishment or a prohibition.
Okay, and that's in contrast to the Rambam, who says that you can't use a kal v'chomer and
or
you can't
else.
Use a hekesh.
Right. That's why the Rambam has to invent this whole form of figuring out where's the prohibition of cursing a parent. It only says punishment.
Yeah.
So he has to say, well.
Saying that in this case, it's because it's not a kal v'chomer, because it's a hekesh,
right.
The Rambam would say so.
Right.
Now, the Rambam would say that still allow for these laws to exist biblically, to exist as rabbinical.
Yeah, only you can't give a death penalty rabbinically.
Didn't you say any prohibitions above that we learned from derivation?
I don't remember. ואפילו היה עונש מבואר מפורש לא יוציאו לו עזרה מן הדין רצוני לומר מקל וחומר בשום פנים. And he says, and I disagree with this whole concept of the Rambam, that if the Pasuk tells me a punishment, then I know that God doesn't want me to do it, then I can derive the warning from a Kal Vachomer. Not true, says the Ramban. I don't care if the punishment is written explicitly, you never use a Kal Vachomer for a warning. And that's what it says in the first chapter of Tractate Makos. Bat aviv ubat imo minayin. How do you know you're not allowed to marry your father's daughter or your mother's daughter? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, Ervat achoto gila aririm yamutu. He who revealed his sister will get the, God will, he gets a death penalty. So Talmud says, Onesh shamanu azara minayin. Fine, that Pasuk discusses the punishment. Where does it say it's prohibited? Remember, you need one Pasuk saying punishment, you need a separate Pasuk saying it's prohibited. Talmud Lomar, that's what the verse says, Ervat achotcha bat avicha uvat imecha. You may not reveal your sister who's the daughter of your father or the daughter of your mother. So the Talmud says, wait a second. That pasuk describes your father's daughter who's not your mother's daughter. The pasuk then describes your mother's daughter who's not your father's daughter, meaning a stepsister from the father or a stepsister from the mother. Those are prohibited. But what about bat aviv ubat imo? Let's go back to the normal family, right? A sister that's both your father and your mother, you share the both parents, minayin. How do you know that's prohibited? Now that would seem obvious, right? So you'd say, hey, fortiori, that's obvious. If you can't marry your mother's daughter and you can't marry your father's daughter, then you obviously can't marry both their daughter. The Talmud says, no, we derive it. Talmud amar, achotecha hi lo tegaleh ovata. That's why the Pasuk reiterates, she is your sister, you may not reveal her. That's a, why does the Pasuk reiterate that? To tell you when she's a whole sister, she's also prohibited. Ab shelo yomru yesh libidin. So the Talmud says, what do I need the Pasuk for? It's obvious. Im azir al bat aviv shelo bat imo, bat imo shelo bat aviv. Bat aviv u bat imo lo kol sheken. If the Torah prohibits me from a sister from the father and a sister from the mother, isn't it certainly prohibited to have a sister who shares both a father and a mother? Halamad dashen mazirin min adin. The Talmud says, yeah. That's why the Torah reiterates you, reiterates it and says your sister from both parents is also prohibited. Why does it spell it out? To teach me this concept. If it wouldn't spell it out, you would not be able to give a punishment based on a derivation. You can only punish that which is based on oh, based on Kal Vachomer. Right. Here you see the Talmud clearly understood the punishment for a sister where there's a shared father and a mother. He says, what's the root of this concept? Ein mazirin min adin. The concept that the Rambam was dealing with. You cannot warn, according to the Rambam, from any derivation. According to the Ramban, from a Kal Vachomer, right? The Talmud brings us the source, is the case of marrying a sister. Right? Now in that case, the Torah clearly says, the punishment for one who marries a complete sister. It says if you marry your father's daughter or your mother's daughter or your complete sister, you get the death penalty. So that's spelled out. And nonetheless, the Talmud says, I still need to spell out the warning. Meaning using the Rambam's logic, I should have said, if it's spelled out that you get the punishment, so I understand that it's prohibited, so I don't need to spell out the warning. I could derive it from a Hekish. No. In that, that's the prototype. That's really the place where I learn this concept of Ein Mazirin Min Adin from.
What does it warn exactly?
It only warns on half-sisters. And then we have to derive that, and then it repeats the warning for a whole sister. From the fact that the Torah repeats the warning for a whole sister, we derive that the Talmud didn't say, well, you could figure it out from a Kal Vachomer. Ah, the Talmud, the Torah is teaching me in mazirin min adin. You cannot warn. The Torah will never warn you from a Kal Vachomer. Now, the Rambam had said, if the Torah spells out the punishment on something, you understand it's prohibited. Then you could use a Kal Vachomer. Says the Ramban, no, you can't. You see, the Talmud said you can't. The Torah had spelled out the punishment, and yet the Torah still had to spell out the prohibition.
And what cases is it spelled punishment for?
All three. Right. Why did it have to spell out the prohibition on all three? According to the Rambam, it would have sufficed had you spelled out the prohibition on two and derived the third.
Rambam, when he was stuck in a corner, talking about cursing the father and mother, the derivation that he would have used, that they used in order to figure out that it was a lav, was not a kal v'chomer, right?
Right.
So his
goes ahead.
Right.
Right.
So although the Rambam is saying that the Ramban is saying that he's including kal v'chomer with everything, he was in fact only talking about hekesh and not kal v'chomer.
That's right.
So
yeah, but he quotes this rule. The Rambam quotes this rule. He says, I'm going to tell you it's derived from hekesh, and you're going to tell me how could I say that? There's the rule in mazirin min adin.
Right, but over here when we're learning from prohibited sister, we're only learning that the Torah doesn't want you to learn a kal v'chomer from it.
Right,
not the rest of derivation.
Oh, fine. Okay, you're saying it works very well with the Ramban's shita.
I'm saying
that only kal v'chomer.
If you could separate the Rambam as saying the Torah could back me into a corner with a derivation, to use a derivation other than a kal v'chomer, that it would work with him also.
Fine, but he doesn't say that. He clearly says, I'll learn it from a hekesh, and you'll question me, how could I learn it from a hekesh, but we have the rule, in mazirin min adin. Yeah, he clearly equates the two.
In mazirin min adin, so you're saying because they call this in mazirin min adin, that's what he's referring to?
Yes.
This
yeah.
And the Ramban is saying that mazirin min adin?
No, he's just saying Ein Mazirin Min Adin is limited to the din of Kal V'chomer.
Okay.
So this is a pretty
interesting
man.
Din throughout Shas is Kal V'chomer.
He says that it doesn't apply Ein Mazirin Min Adin. He only brings a case where it applies to Kal V'chomer. He doesn't actually go and say that it also applies to every other case.
The Ramban holds it does not apply to other derivations. The Ramban really holds it's only a kal v'chomer. Okay. This works well for the Ramban.
But, okay, on the other side, though, on the flip side, he doesn't say that this means that every other kind is okay, and the other kind must
right.
mean that it is okay. He only says that it's not okay in the case of a kal v'chomer.
Right.
He doesn't actually say that.
Right. Right, but... Now I'm going to tell you something which is pivotal in all your learning, and you just have to remember to try and apply it. It takes a moment's thought as you're learning, but you have to remember to apply it, and you'll see that it helps you understand a lot of the depths of the Gemara. Whenever you approach a Gemara, you have to ask yourself, what was the default position of the Gemara? Does the Gemara have to prove me that this is prohibited or that it's permitted? Where are we coming out of? And the Gemara will very often ask that. The Gemara very often asks, Tana Ichakai, where are you coming from? You started off by asking me, Meim Asaikorin is Shema. You begin Shas by discussing, when can I read Shema? Who told you I have to read Shema? Meaning you're assuming I have to. Who says? And you know what? It's not so clear I have to. Meaning if you move forward another 30 daf, you suddenly discover it's a machlokas whether the whole chiyuv of Shema is biblical or not. Maybe the Dibarat Abam is talking about Torah. Who says it's talking about reading Shema? It's not so clear what the maskan of the Gemara is either. So the Mishnah starts off with an assumption, yeah, you got to read Shema. When do you read Shema? The Gemara says, who said I have to read Shema? There's a pasuk, Peshachol Kumecha, and then it seems to flow very smoothly till you hit the Gemara that says, well, maybe not. But you always have to ask yourself, what was the Gemara, what was the default? So here you see the default was that you could derive azara from any law of derivation. Along comes the Talmud and tells me, I have a chiddush. You cannot derive a prohibition from a kal v'chomer. Ein mazirin min adin. So what does it teach me? It teaches me just that. This I cannot use. And I remain with my default with regard to the other laws of derivation that I could use them. Clear?
Okay, but still the Ramban doesn't say anything to support the default. He's only proving the exceptional case. He doesn't go and chalek on the Rambam. The Rambam is the Rambam says you can't use a hekesh. Right, he doesn't collect it and say, well, you can use a hekesh.
He doesn't prove it yet. Until now, he just proved the other way. Okay.
Have you looked into any explanation about why would the Rambam would hold like this?
Let's wait. The Ramban is still talking. Let's see. Hinei bekan nitba'er lahem onesh lebat aviv sheibat imo. I'm rereading. You see, in this case, the Torah clearly says that a sister from both parents, one who lives with her gets the punishment. Ve'afal piken, and nonetheless, hutzlach lehem mikra la'vi azara la. Nonetheless, the Talmud says, I do need a source to prohibit it, mipnei she'en mazirin min adin. Even though the punishment is explicit, I still need a verse. I cannot derive the prohibition from a kal v'chomer. And this is all with regard to the law of derivation of a kal v'chomer. But when it comes to a hekesh, you can use a hekesh to derive a warning or a punishment. And you know what? Mr. Rambam, you said I'll only use a hekesh when the punishment is clear. If the Torah tells me I punish for a guy who does this, the person who curses his father gets a death penalty. Okay, where does it say I can't curse my father? Ah, it doesn't. Once the Torah told me there's a punishment, I'll derive the prohibition from a hekesh. Says the Rambam, no. The Talmud, I'll show you, uses the hekesh to derive a prohibition, even where I don't have a punishment spelled out. Even though the punishment is not spelled out, as we explained earlier, you have the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, you want to claim against me that I cannot warn from a kal v'chomer? I'm not. It's a hekesh. So the Gemara clearly says, a hekesh I can use to derive a nazara, a warning, to derive a prohibition. And so too, the Talmud uses a gzera shava to make a nazara, to prohibit things. As we learned, that the Talmud uses a gzera shava to extend the prohibition of the prohibited women three generations. The Torah says you can't marry your mother. Does the Torah say you can't marry your grandmother, your great-grandmother? We derive it.
But in this case, he says, "Afal pi she lo ye haonish meforash." But I thought we were talking about a case where we do have an onish and where the hazara is not
right. So his point is, they're willing to learn the hazara even where the onish is not meforash. The Rambam says, if the onish is meforash, only then can I learn the hazara from the hekesh. The Ramban says that's not true. Even when you do not have the onish meforash, you'll still see that they use a hekesh to derive an azara. And you'll notice he doesn't have so many examples.
So one azara from another azara.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Okay.
Aval azarat mikalel aviv v'imo, but the prohibition of cursing a parent. So now back to the homestead. So what do I say about that prohibition? Hotziyua bagmara midrashat lo tekalel cheresh ve'elohim lo tekalel. The Talmud says, it says in the Torah, don't curse a deaf man. There's another prohibition in the Torah that says, don't curse a judge. Shemachnisim ba kol adam. So the Talmud says, okay, we're going to derive from here that you can't curse anyone. V'chein azara tamakeh otam, lamdu amimakeh kol adam, sheyitzram belav. That what the Talmud says is it's prohibited to hit anyone, so that includes the parent. Kmo shamuz, the Talmud says, hikau akash en bashave putan loke. The Talmud says if someone hits someone else, and there is no monetary value, meaning there's pain, he smacks him across the face. Okay, there's no one around, he doesn't shame in front of everyone, there's no value, there's no monetary, you can't sue him. Nonetheless, he transgressed, he gets slashes. So you see, the Talmud tells us, how do I know you can't curse a parent? Because you can't curse anyone. How do I know you can't curse how do you know you can't hit a parent? Because it's prohibited to hit anyone. So the Talmud says, if I have a prohibition that encompasses the parent, even if it's not specific to the parent, then I could have a specific punishment to the parent.
How's that?
Because I've prohibited hitting the parent. I've prohibited
hitting the clerk.
Right.
No, there's not a,
right.
Why? How can they make one stuff to the parent?
It's a good question. It doesn't say in the Ramban how he's learning it. What I think the Ramban means is, what's the rule we're contending with here? I have a rule that says you cannot punish if you didn't prohibit me from doing it. So I think, I'm not sure, but I think what the Ramban means to say is, it says if you cursed your parents, one who cursed his parents gets the death penalty. So what will you tell me? But where'd you tell me I can't curse my parents? So it's legitimate that my answer will be, what do you mean? You're not allowed to curse anyone. Meaning, if the act is prohibited from a more broad prohibition, I think the way the Ramban is learning, that's enough that you won't say, you can't punish without having warned me. Well, I did warn you. So what if I didn't say...
So we're acting on the fact that there's a punishment.
Right.
Okay, I didn't catch
it. It says there's a punishment. My whole problem is, how could you punish it, but you didn't warn him?
Okay, so that's why you could say there's no punishment. There's not a specific thing to hit the clerk. There's no punishment to hit the clerk.
There's a prohibition to hit the clerk. One would get lashes for hitting the clerk.
Right.
But I think that's other Ramban's learning here. I think so.
What's his whole point here? Is it to show how the Ramban could...
Well, he's telling you how he learns it, and he's disagreeing with Rambam.
But he's not even learning with the Hekesh. He's not using the Hekesh.
Well, no, because I think the Gemara, I have to look up the Gemara in Sanhedrin there, but I think the Gemara does use the Hekesh to encompass everyone. From Lot Kalesh L'Cheresh and Elohim Lot Kalel, it says, okay, you can't curse anyone. I think it is a Hekesh right there, but I have to
but
look.
Why didn't you just use the Rambam's Hekesh to say that the parents have the
Rambam doesn't spell out the Hekesh. He doesn't tell you. It just says, it's from the Hekesh. I think, look at page, you go. Ramban quotes the Rambam.
So maybe the Ramban didn't know what Hekesh was.
I don't know.
But the Rambam says it's not a Hekesh. What his case, he got this, it's not a Hekesh. It is a Hekesh. He's saying that he's allowed to use a Hekesh, but it is a Hekesh. Whereas the Ramban has free will to use a Hekesh, but he's not using the Hekesh. He's using this other way of saying that it's already been included in a general klal of Isser.
The Ramban says that he's trying to get out. He spends like several lines trying to explain how he's getting out of using the Hekesh because he doesn't believe the Hekesh can be used.
No, he's explaining why he can use the Hekesh. He's saying normally you're not allowed to use any derivation, but in this case, since I've already got a punishment, therefore I can use a Hekesh in order to say that if there's a love involved. That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to create a love with using the Hekesh.
Right, but it's
accepted. I don't know if it's...
It's not the general rules you can't use.
But I'm saying if the Rambam is using a Hekesh to prove his exception to the rule, whatever, then the Ramban can use that Hekesh freely because he doesn't have a problem with this rule. There's no rule for him. He accepts that you can use Hekesh as much as you want. So he could just take that Hekesh and say, well, this is how I learned it, and I don't have to prove any rule because of it.
Right.
It's perfectly legit, according to my
Shiva. Right.
But he's not using that Hekesh.
But it sounds like he is when he says that...
The Ramban.
He says that... I mean, it seems, and maybe it's implicit, does he use the word Hekesh? He says it before.
He says it a different way. He's saying that since hitting your parents, or cursing your parents... can be included in cursing anyone, so that's how you know that there's a prohibition against that.
He used the word says v'chi tema ein anashim min hadin hikshu fu v'chen b'gzer shava kmo shalamdu v'shlasha dorot v'ayot aval esharat miklal.
I'll tell you what. The Gemara learns it from a Binyan Av. And there's somewhere, I don't remember where Rashi explains that a Binyan Av really works like a kal v'chomer. What's a binyanav? So what we're going to say, we're going to say tzada shaveh here. We're going to say the Torah told you don't curse a leader, a judge in your nation. The Torah said don't curse a deaf person in your nation. So you might tell me I can't curse a judge because I'm not allowed to rule against the judge. I have to honor him. Maybe that's the stringency about him, why I'm prohibited from cursing him. But the Torah says, don't curse a deaf person. I don't have any obligation to honor him. I have to pity him. I don't have to honor him. You'll tell me, maybe the reason you can't curse a deaf person is specifically that. Poor guy. He's deaf. Torah says, have compassion. Don't curse him. I'll tell you no. The Torah told me also not to curse a judge. So you see, the prohibition of cursing does not stem from the fact that I have to honor and does not stem from the fact that I have to pity. Because I have two places where I have the prohibition. Lo ra'ize ke ra'ize. The proof that you might have said for this one, well, maybe you can't curse him because you have to honor him. Well, that doesn't fit for the deaf man. And the proof they might have said, well, that's the reason by him is because you have to pity him. Well, that doesn't work for the judge. Hatzad, right. So hatzad shaveh shaveh. So I say, okay. So then, what is the common denominator between them? The common denominator is that they're a citizen. They're a part of your people, and you're prohibited from cursing them. So I'll tell you, by the same token, you cannot curse your parent or anyone else who's a citizen who's a part of the Jewish people. So that's the tzad ha-shaveh. That's the binyanav, and that's the tzad ha-shaveh.
What's a binyanav?
Binyanav is that I build a concept. I say, inductive. I've seen it here, and now I'm going to induce that in other places it applies as well.
So why use those two examples, deaf and judge?
Those are the two the Torah gave me. Well, maybe there's more to it than that, but for now, from our perspective, what can we derive from those two? That's what I can derive.